Hello and welcome to the D2C podcast. I'm Eric Dick. Today we're forecasting the future of first party data with a couple SaaS legends, Richard Harris, CEO of Black Crow, and Klaviyo's president, Steve Rowland. With third party cookie data disappearing, first party data becomes all the more important. This conversation covers the current state of the cookie apocalypse, and it's a deep dive into what some of the really smart brands today are doing with AI to create predictions about how to engage your customers across channels to produce the best customer experiences. You'll learn how AI can amplify your customer retention strategies through personalized customer journeys or strands, how the best brands balance their email and SMS communications, and the future of omnichannel CX driven by predictive AI. It's not every day you get a senior executive from a public company on the old D2C podcast, so listen in and stick around till the end where I ask Steve how far Klaviyo is from investing in a Super Bowl commercial. On with the show.
The way we think about data is at the individual level. The atom of the experience is the individual. We predict the future value or future actions of a user in real time. And we do that at the individual level. Now, it's a lot of data to manage. That's why you need machines to sort of do this for you. It's too much for any individual in an Excel spreadsheet to do. Ultimately, humans are somewhat predictable. There will be groupings that look more like each other. But when it comes down to like what experience are you going to put in front of this individual right now, you need to make that choice, that decision at the individual level.
Richard, Steve, welcome to the D2C podcast. This is a big one. Richard, this is a return to the podcast for you. We had a great conversation, last year, talking about the importance of first-party data, predictive analytics when it comes to media buying specifically. Today, we're talking about the retention side of the coin, which is even more important, probably, given some of the market factors that are out there. Richard, why don't you just kick us off by telling us why it's so important that users are thinking about this intersection of AI and their first-party data when it comes to the retention side of the coin?
Sure. I think, you know, everything is about building relationships. You know, we were talking a bit about this earlier, but the fact that personal relationships don't scale means that data is really the way you get insights into people. We don't know all of our customers. If you're a brand out there on Shopify, you can't know all of your customers. And so you need to take the clues that you have, right? You need to take and put into action all of the data that you own. Now, the best data out there, first of all, the third-party data ecosystem is kind of collapsing. That's probably a wonderful thing for privacy and just taking one element of creepiness out of the digital world. But first-party data is the data that your users sort of give you in the form of their behavior and opting in to receive email or SMS messages, telling you what they're looking for. And if you can actually use that to drive insights and make sure that all of your interactions with users are based on helping them accomplish whatever objective that they have, that feels relevant. That feels like you're building a relationship. And so data is really the through line through every touch point that you have with the user, and particularly on retention, helping them get to what's likely to be in their lifecycle journey with you as a brand. Put data to use, put your first party data to use, and help people accomplish what they're trying to do.
I think when you think about it, you've got the third-party ecosystem crumbling, like you said, which really reduces your ability to go out into the web and apply your first-party data to people while they're in other modes. But, you know, what we talked about, which was, you know, you want a brand to feel like a bar where everyone knows your name in a way. When you have a great relationship with a brand, you've kind of given them license to greet you properly and to make you feel at home. And I feel like that's even more important. And retention becomes even more important when you can't track people with cookies all around the web to bring them back in. Your owned audiences become super important because that's how you can bring them back in this familiar way, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Like I always think about our digital world, and it's so fragmented now. And you just kind of touched on the bar analogy. And that's the kind of the connection point I make. Like, you know, I have a radius around my home that have my favorite restaurants or my favorite clothing store, or, you know, even my favorite bar. And you're right. Like, the more you walk in, the more you make that connectedness to the people and the brand and the actual location. It's really hard to do in a digital world, but so much more important because the choices for consumers are so much bigger. So how do you really make that connection and really build that same type of trust? And exactly what Richard was just talking about is it's not the creepy piece of getting all third-party data and me getting emails and notifications when I didn't even sign up for the site, but really beginning to give consent. The more I interact with you, like, yeah, I trust you and I want to form that same relationship because I feel like we as human beings at the, you know, at the core, we want that connectedness and it's harder to do in the digital world, but it's still desired.
It's kind of a curse to live in interesting times. You've got customers who are reacting to and expecting like the best customer experiences possible. We have the technology that makes that available. We have governing bodies kind of reducing, you know, in favor of privacy's ability of, you know, brands' ability to actually enact this. So I think it just behooves the brand owner to get really smart about how to do this. And like we say, in a world where third-party data is going away, it just makes your first-party data that much more important and how you kind of use it. Richard, you'd agree?
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, one area where what we do and what Klaviyo does, is, you know, runs on a similar theme is that it is this asset that brands have, all of this first-party data, right? The data that consumers give you. And making sense of it, right? There's so much of it. If you think about all of the streaming event data that's kicked off by a user interacting with your brand, right? How they're moving through the purchase funnel. Are they looking at your images? Are they dwelling on certain things? These are all kind of clues. And as long as you, if you think about like the best environments, like your Netflix home screen or your Instagram home screen, that's almost like a feed where you demand that the brand knows you. You demand that Netflix gives you really relevant stuff. And that's keyed off of all these things like, well, did you watch this movie or that TV show? Did you bail halfway through and never finish it, right? And that is a data process, but it's one of those environments where you're like, you better do that because I don't want you recommending some BS show that I'm not going to like. And if as a brand, you know, selling stuff on Shopify, if you can develop that same sort of relationship with a consumer where it's like the consumer wants you to understand them so you can deliver relevance and meaning, that is the ideal relationship. And again, that has to be driven off of first party data. And, you know, in there's so much of it now that you need machines to make sense of it.
Yeah, totally agree with that.
Spotify is the one for me that. To me, it's like the algorithm that I feel best about like giving it all to because it gives me so much good stuff. And it's almost, and I can tell like when I spend the weekend with my daughter and listen to her songs, you know, my next week's feed isn't exactly the way I want it. And I can notice that right away that like that poopy farty song is like, I didn't need any more of those in my feed.
Yeah.
And I really noticed it. On the podcast, you know, we talk with Jordan Gordon, the head of email at Pilot House. Quite often, one of the big sentiments that came across this year was that for Black Friday, Cyber Monday, and this is kind of a sentiment I felt across the ecosystem a little bit. There were brands that were up, but there were a lot of brands that were flat or down this year. And the brands that were flat, let's say, what one of the things they saw was they had to send more messages to kind of get the same results. And I know the platforms are tightening up. We actually had to go back and correct one of our podcasts where we talked about you should be able to reach back into your past of people that maybe haven't bought and message them. And we actually had to update that podcast because we're like, oh, actually that news is a little bit old because of the way filters have tightened up. Basically, you shouldn't be reaching that far back. The metaphor we used was the shotgun approach versus the sniper approach. And when it comes to retention, people are looking for that efficiency. You can't go too far back. You need efficiency when it comes to keeping your reputation up as a sender. How are you seeing the best brands do that, Steve, with AI?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I mean, it's interesting. We've spent so much time talking about the first party data, but then when you look at really two different categories of customers, cohorts of customers, we have over 135,000 customers. So we have a lot of data and we study this all the time. And there's all the customers have the same first party data, but we're seeing how they use it differently. And we actually saw during this Black Friday, Cyber Monday that the people who were growing their GMV and their AOV and their order volume were actually the ones that were sending more smartly. by using first-party data. So whether that's using AI-driven segments to come up with the right customers that you want to target at the right time, and then just as importantly, what are the channels that you're using to actually touch them? And how often, and what does that frequency look like? Just as you put together a very smart journey of guiding them through, you know, through the funnel, we saw a whole bunch of customers as well that their GMV didn't grow as fast and their AOV wasn't as high. Their order volume may have been higher, but their overall results were less efficient because they were sending volumes and volumes of emails and SMSs to really the whole list. So you see we're seeing a maturation in the market where I think it's gotten harder to compete as a D2C brand. A lot of different reasons, macroeconomic, more competitive, more savvy consumers, things kind of settling down. And you see a whole cohort of customers saying, hey, wait, and brands going, wait a minute, there's a better way to do this by using AI against my first party to create unique and intimate journeys for those brands. And we're seeing the results in that. So I think the market is shifting. Not everyone's there yet, but the old days of I got to drive more GMV and more orders, I just better send more emails. We're actually seeing that in some cases being less efficient than it used to be and driving fewer results.
That's interesting. We talk about segmentation all the time. And I think it's almost like we're looking for really smarter segments about who we send to and when, but yeah. It's even like going a level deeper that we talked about the term of like strands and not just segments, groups of people who have maybe one data point the same or two data points the same, but we're heading to an era, Minority Report, where he comes into the mall and it says, hey, I hope you like that V-neck sweater, essentially, where you have that possibility of creating marketing that takes into account a customer's entire journey or a lot more yes. of their journey. Richard, are you seeing brands like think about that customer journey in terms of strands?
Absolutely. I mean, you have to, right? And if you think about, the way we do things, the way we think about data is at the individual level, meaning the atom of the experience is the individual. And so we do things like we predict the future value or future actions of a user in real time. And we do that at the individual level. Now it's a lot of data to manage and to be able to do. And that's why you need machines to sort of do this for you. It's too much for any individual in an Excel spreadsheet to do, but you need to think about what are the steps in the journey. Now, ultimately, there will be humans are somewhat predictable. There will be groupings that look more like each other. But when it comes down to like what experience are you going to put in front of this individual right now, you need to make that choice, that decision at the individual level.
It's super. And I just see the marketing tree in front of me. And I every time I've created like a hyper segmented approach to a marketing campaign, I just go like, oh my God, what have I done? Because then you need to fill in the other side of that tree, which is, interacting messages that change on various, where are we at in terms of, I guess that's like generative AI in a way, like we have the AI that can really segment our audiences really smartly. Where are we at with the AI that actually helps us deliver custom yeah. messages or even create custom messages based on the data segments that we've created?
Yeah. First of all, inside of our platform, we have Klaviyo AI that allows you to just natural language processing. Say, tell me all of the customers that, haven't purchased in the last 3 months and last time purchased this product. And it literally starts building your segmentation. Then you say, I want to build a flow or campaign that allows you to then put it into what channel. And I want to put this offer and it automatically pushes it. So that technology already exists today. The content creation piece, there's other technologies out there that customers can use, but we're much further along than I think a lot of customers realize and brands are leveraging. And Richard, I know you probably see the same thing on your side of the business as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what's really cool is that, there are so many tools out there that people can very easily use and get access to Gen AI. I think when it comes together with real time, I think that's what's going to be super exciting. It's not totally happening yet, but when we predict, say, user behavior or user value, that's happening in real time. And it's happening, yes, for people that you know, right? People who are in your customer database, and also for people you don't know, the anonymous users that are showing up. And, you know, people will tend to have 10 or so percent of folks in there that are known users that are sort of in their customer database. But that means there's a big sort of like black area of, or a void, a dark area, the sort of dark matter of shopping where you don't really know who someone is. And all of a sudden, you know, what we do is we're able to predict a whole bunch of things in real time, even for those folks. And I think when Gen AI comes into it and you can start modifying based on some predicted behaviors right then and there, that's going to get really exciting. I don't think we're too far away from that.
Yeah, I also think it allows us to start and brands to start experimenting in different ways. You know, it used to be like, I'm just going to send out this email and see how many people click through, and then I'm going to do SMS, and if I have an app, I might do a push. And really understanding that journey, not only for that first engagement, but then following it through reviews, support, those are becoming now meaningful channels. As an example, we have a customer, Marine Layer. In fact, this is a Marine Layer shirt. Not surprising, you know, I've become that's a trusted brand for me. They've linked all of those channels together. And what they realize is that they're realizing when consumers actually are clicking through based on their preferences, that allow now not only to put the content in the right channel and that right message, but they're even moving into the product reviews and support area. If I go in and say, I really like this shirt, you know, give it 5 stars, fits perfectly well, fabric's really well, you know, constructed. In many cases, I might get an actual promotion that says, hey, that's great. Did you know that we have this other shirt that looks like this or a pair of pants? Here's a 20% coupon if you want to click through. So you're really getting smarter around the entire journey or opportunities to engage your customer, not to just convert, but to continue to build that brand loyalty. And I think that's where we're getting much, much more sophisticated. And again, the AI capabilities enable you to experiment more, to gather more data, to get more sophisticated as you approach customers in that way.
Richard, can you expand on that? I'm really clear on Black Crow and how it works predictively on the media buying side to make smarter bidding decisions, make smarter creative decisions. I imagine it's the same on the retention side, but just walk us through how, you know, smart segmentation works with Black Crow and a company like Klaviyo.
Sure. Yeah, we have a bunch of customers in common, Marine Layer being one of them. For example, one of the ways that we help our customers grow their lists, right? So most of our customers use Klaviyo, and you know, Klaviyo is an amazing platform for communications. And one of the big things is like, how do you make sure, right? So paid customer acquisition is getting more and more expensive. Once someone is actually interacting with your brand, you want to make sure, I don't have to go out and pay Meta again to have them come back and see my brand. I'd love them to opt into my email or SMS program. And one of the ways we help brands grow their list so they can use Klaviyo, you know, even more frequently, is we predict in real time, when is a user likely to actually opt in? Right? What message is going to resonate with them? What offer might resonate with them? When should I actually show the like box? And when you combine all of those things in real time, you can really get your opt-in rate up from, you know, maybe it's 3% up to, you can double, triple, even quadruple that. And then all of a sudden you're growing your database of known users, and you can start triggering the automated flows based on their actions more frequently with more of your user base. So those predictions are really important to growing your own channel.
I think that's really interesting. It takes me back to the early days of the internet where you're optimizing on like a 3-second trigger, or you're, yes, in order to pop that. And it's like, and most people have bad, you know, you see a spinny wheel with a discount or whatever. Like, it's really easy to have a neutral or bad experience, I think, with that pop-up. So the more intelligence you can add to like, when someone has that affinity or when someone's most likely to convert, I bet that just makes a big difference in that you get more opt-ins and you also piss people off less. You send people less negative signals when you're doing it in the wrong time, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, like, you know, the goal is consent. The goal is opting in, right? There's other models out there where brand, like working with vendors who just buy third-party databases and then do cookie syncs, and then you end up getting an email from a brand when you didn't opt in. And it, I don't know, that for me is on the creepy side of the world. But when you can just, again, it's about helping, using data to understand what users are trying to accomplish and then delivering what they need at that moment. And so if someone is willing to opt in, just if you didn't, you know, if you get the timing right or the message right or the creative right, then you're adding real value, right? You're continuing to enable the user accomplish what they want to accomplish at the right moment.
Yeah. And I think we've even seen in the past that the more, the better experience you have with a brand, the more willing you're more willing to give them even more information. I mean, I remember back in the early days when we had the iPhone and location services came out, and I turned it off and I'm not letting Starbucks know who I am. I'm not letting Home Depot know who I'm at. This is crazy. I don't know where I am. And all of a sudden I'm like, God, I can't find the closest store. I can't order.
Yeah.
I can't get the promotion I want. And so you start selectively turning it on to the brands that you really trust. And that's the same thing, but at a much deeper level than that simplistic example I gave. But we've proven to ourselves in the past that we'll give up our privacy, as long as it's not creepy, if I have the choice to give it up. And I also have the choice to take it away. And that's the real connection on first-party data to the brands that we have to leverage in the right way as merchants with building that trust with those consumers.
100%. And just back to like lead generation as a prerogative, I think that was the other big theme that I saw this year in Black Friday and every Black Friday, Cyber Monday. But it's like people that rock up to Q4 being like, all right, it's go time. They're going to have a bad time in a lot of ways. It's the months and months and months, the quarters in advance where you're building that list and kind of putting that lump through the snake as a digest kind of thing. So it's really imperative that brands are doing everything they can to grow their list smartly year round, not just Q4.
Absolutely.
I totally agree.
One of the things we didn't actually talk about this on the pre-interview, but one of the things I'm keep really close tabs on is Feastables. Friends with Joseph Siegel. I think he's a Klaviyo client. But just what they're doing with AMP, like this is something that we're always looking at as a newsletter, right? Where people have a certain experience on our email, and that ability to like create actual like interaction, like in an email using things like AMP, I find really, really interesting. We had Joseph on talking about how he generated like 7 million clicks in one email. He's like, you only get this discount when you click it 100 times, which as a parent, I'm just like, oh my God, I hope my daughter never starts getting emails from parents like this. I'll just see her clicking away. What's your position on AMP, Steve, and creating more interactive experiences in email?
Yeah, I think it's interesting you bring this up because I think email's been around for a long time, and yet it still continues to get revitalized, in a way to be a much more interactive and engaging channel. We're seeing customers do the same thing. It's not just blast the form like you used to. You still have to get the attention of the user and make it interesting and interactive. I also think it's a distinction even between SMS, right? So SMS is now becoming this very intimate, personalized channel. So I think people are getting much smarter at how to make interactive and engaging content through email and also adjusting how they think about SMS. And the combination of those two things, I think, is really enhancing that connectivity with the consumer.
Speaking of SMS, like this Q4 over Black Friday, what were like a lot of brands are full on with SMS. They go like full on SMS, full on email. What did the best brands do that you guys saw when it came to balancing SMS messaging with email marketing?
Yeah, it was similar to what I just touched on. Like they're realizing that email is much more of your broadcast information, first touch, if you will. So I click through it and I say, oh, it's interesting that new releases for Black Friday, Cyber Monday. I'll go back to my favorite brand, one of my favorite brands, Marine Layer. Then I end up looking, I end up maybe ordering something. And then all of a sudden I'm engaged in an email. We received your order. Thanks for the order. By the way, there's another 20% off if you want to buy the matching pants. So it becomes a one-to-one, much more of a one-to-one communication. So you see a balancing of the channel. We still saw increases of usage of both channels from our customers, but they were using it more smartly, as I indicated before, because of that engagement. And then we haven't talked a lot about push. We're seeing a lot of brands now build apps And these aren't ones that just necessarily have now retail locations, because we're even seeing online brands now build stores. And obviously the stores have been moving to online, but push notification is now becoming an increasing channel, certainly nowhere near SMS and email as a percentage, but it did increase year over year, which means brands are building apps, which again creates an even tighter connection with that consumer.
Richard, on the predictive side, like when it comes to segmentation, what were you seeing across these three channels?
Yeah, I mean, definitely a lot of activity. And so there's been a blending. There used to be sort of email providers, SMS providers. People are getting into the different, into each other's zones, right? And so like Klaviyo, you can get everything from Klaviyo, and that's great. And we're seeing, what we heard from a lot of brands was the email is a way to provide a maybe richer experience that can be about the brand. Maybe it's a little less transactional focused. It can be more about brand messaging. And SMS, you know, as Steve was saying, it's a little more targeted. It's faster. You don't have as much sort of real estate to play with. And maybe that's the place where, you know, it's more offer-based, action-based. And the way those two things play together, I think creating, especially when you understand your customer well, you have some insight into their, you know, behavior and value, you can start making a holistic journey across all of these steps, you know, from email to SMS and back. If you're using push notifications on web or on app, that can be part of it as well.
And is that essentially Black Crow's Smart ID? I was just seeing, we didn't actually talk about that much in the pre-interview, but is Smart ID what you've kind of created to encapsulate that entire customer journey? What is Smart ID?
Yeah, Smart ID is just a way, it's essentially a way of doing identity the way Apple wants it done. So I think so many brands, you know, in the wake of all the iOS changes, which Apple says are for privacy reasons, we can talk about what that's actually about, but it's not because Apple loves you so much, it's because Apple wants to own digital identity, and that's what you sign away when you scroll through 18 pages of terms and services every time you know get a new iPhone. But what Smart ID does is it just uses server-side infrastructure to enable brands to create their own identifier, right? So it's a way to understand that Steve is Steve when he's on my website using the data they already have, especially if they've opted in or purchased before. And so there's a way Apple wants this done, not through a third-party ecosystem, and that's actually a good thing, but through the domain owner, the brand themselves setting the identifier. And we just set that infrastructure up so brands can do this for themselves. But that's cool. A way to maintain visibility into an entire customer journey, right? Through the email, website, do they respond to the text, the app, et cetera.
The strand.
The strand, that's right.
Do you guys think we're actually going to get to a better, like, do you think the system pressure that we're experiencing about the third-party cookies, about Yahoo and Gmail tightening up their inboxes, do you think ultimately, like, on the other side of these changes, we're actually going to get to a better place for both customers and marketers, Steve? Or do you think we'll look back and be like, oh my God, we had it so good back then?
No, I think it's good. I think it's really good because the more sophisticated brands are going to win. I mean, it's everything that we've been talking about. Like we just started talking about, you know, engagement channels, email, SMS, push, reviews, but it's all, those are only smart and intelligent based on what you know. And so you've got to capture all of that, what we would call event data, which we have, we actually hold the event data forever. Like we don't, you could have a consumer that bought from you 7 years ago and you have access to that data. So we have, there's so much richness of data, but if you're not actually leveraging that in the right way, then none of those channels are very smart. And then you're just blasting again. So I think all of the things that are coming down with Yahoo and Google are really good. And by the way, we were totally prepared for it because we're already helping customers maintain compliance. We're helping customers ensure that they, you know, aren't getting rejection rates and spam. So it was very easy for us to help our customers, guide them pretty quickly on, hey, this is new. You're already, half of you are already doing this. We can help the rest of you do it as well. And in the end, it's just going to make brands better at engaging and building those reputational and trust that we've been talking about. So I think it's a really good forcing function just to make us better as merchants and brands, as well as consumers benefit from it. And that grows the overall ecosystem and business and process.
And requires smarter tools to be developed, like potentially like Black Row, right? Like, I think it's created this whole ecosystem of innovation around this. That's pretty fun to play in.
Yeah. Well, I think for Black Row and even for Klaviyo, the one thing it is doing is there's quote unquote lots of tools, but if you don't have the right intelligence in those tools, it's very hard, I think, for individuals inside of brands to keep up with everything that's going on. So finding the right technologies and the right companies to work with who are already doing this, it just frees those individuals and brands to focus on what they're great at, which is building new products and new experiences. And I think that's the pressure point that's starting to happen.
It's non-trivial to build machine learning systems, right, Richard? You've had some experience back to your Trivago days or your travel days. Travelocity, yeah, yeah. Is it?
It is non-trivial. And that's really like the reason we built Black Row is because I saw the power of the sort of enterprise AI stack at Fortune 500 companies. And it is like it moves the needle on the P&L, right? You know, most brands are kind of CAC LTV machines at the end of the day. You've got a cool product at the center. And it's like, how efficiently can you get people in front of it? And then how valuable can you make the fact that you got them in front of it? And those tools are crushing it for the Fortune 500. And everything we're doing is about making that same enterprise AI stack available to the mid-market, right? To Shopify stores. And that means it can't be complicated. You need to be able to do it in one click. And you need to be able to really, it's about zoning in, like Steve was saying, on like building an actual customer relationship. And I do think the privacy changes in the end will be good. I hope it doesn't favor Apple too much, where they're sort of taking their toll on every brand consumer interaction. But I think dialing down the volume and therefore the consumer fatigue with just all the bombardment of not terribly relevant ads, information, messages. And when you pull back the volume, you need to really increase the sort of quality and relevance. And so I think we're going to look at this as a turning point that will hopefully push things towards just brands building better relationships with people who care about what they're doing.
I love to hear it. And how far, but it's funny, we talk about the human touch, but how far are we from autonomous marketing systems that just take in the entire, like we can just go skiing, guys. We could just go to Europe. We could go to the Alps. We could just go skiing and just let the machines look over us with love and grace. How far are we away from that future?
I mean, people are talking about autonomous companies, right? Where it's literally like a human figures out what to do and then boom, there's like an automated stack to do everything. So those exist, not at scale, but they exist.
Yeah. I still think from a marketing perspective, I think where AI gets to be super interesting is it gives time back and unlocks creativity and ideas. I mean, that's what builds great brands, and great marketers are the ones that are creatively thinking. When they're down in the weeds sitting there thinking about who do I market to and how do I do it and what are the channels I use and how do I create that customer journey, that's time away from the creativeness that makes marketers great marketers. And so I just think this unlocks huge potential in marketers being able to create more and be more creative. And again, I think in general, that's a really, really good thing. And maybe there's a little extra time to go skiing or do whatever you like to do. But I think the positives are unlocking that creativity more than anything.
100%. And I just back into the weeds a little bit, Richard, because I know we talked a lot about ads, Meta. I imagine that your Smart ID and that Black Row plays seamlessly omni-channel, right? So that you can take smart predictive segments that you learn from your first party data and then reach them. Like how do ads and email and SMS play together in the Black Row Klaviyo world?
Sure. So if you think about it, like paid acquisition, right? So you'll spend some money on TikTok or Meta, and there's some sort of call to action there, and then they get to your owned property. If this is awareness, right? So it's the first time someone's experienced your brand or your product, you're kind of driving them to your core experience, which is probably your website. You know, there are two things that you want to do there. One is you probably want to sell something, but two is, as a brand, you want to build a relationship, right? You don't just want that first transaction. And so depending on the kind of business you're in or the kind of product, you should get to know what the consumer journey looks like. Like, do most people buy right away? Or is really the thing you want to do is make sure that you can, through your own channels, through Klaviyo, build a relationship with them. So you want to get their email or their mobile number. But those all flow together, right? Once you bring a user in, you figure out what they're trying to accomplish. You can actually predict what their lifetime value is going to be, certainly from the moment they make a transaction, but even before that, you can predict their future value. And those things, you know, as long as you can set an identifier and understand their journey over time, more and more touch points, you can associate more and more touch points with that user and just make your experience more and more relevant to what it is they're trying to do. So there's, you know, an infinite number of ways, like really every touch point that you have as a brand can be informed by data. You can make it more interesting, relevant, and beautiful for the consumer if you leverage the data that you already have.
Love it. I think we'll leave it there, guys. This was great. I want to just thank Steve and congratulate Klaviyo for going public. I haven't got to chat with anyone from Klaviyo about that. So that must have been quite the experience. How close were you guys to doing a Super Bowl commercial? That's what I want to know. You guys are at that level of, you're at that like level of public consciousness, you know?
Unless I could do a Dunkin's like commercial, you know, I'm not so sure it would have been worth it.
Yeah.
We're a long way away from Super Bowl commercials. We're spending money in different ways, like on R&D and development of products.
You'd have to do a Kanye commercial where you just go direct to camera and be like, sorry guys, I didn't have any budget for it. We're too busy innovating the email world.
Exactly.
Nice.
Exactly.
We're also very far away.
Yeah. You're not on the Super Bowl level yet. No, it's funny. I saw a comparison the other day. That's like, we require a bit of a recalibration when you look, it's a $7 million Super Bowl ad, but Mr. Beast reaches a Super Bowl audience like every single week, yes. Week in, week
That's
out,
crazy.
Right? So we have a bit of this mindset shift that we're in this middle of where attention is really changing, and it behooves you to own the attention that you can own and really foster it and kindle it, which is, I think, what we've been talking about today.
Yeah, right on.
Nice. Thanks, guys. Go check out blackcrow.ai if you haven't already. I think you probably know Klaviyo, probably know how to spell it. It's one of those weird spelled words, but...
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
But I think that's helped you. So thanks, guys. This was a lot of fun.
Thanks so much for listening to today's episode. If you're not a subscriber to our newsletter, you can do that right now at directtoconsumer.co. I'm Eric Dick, and this has been the D2C Podcast. We'll see you next time.